evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, January 23rd. I'm your humble host, or not so humble host, PK, and as always, I pay thanks and homage to my sponsors at bbsradio.com on station 2. And I'm doing a pre-recorded interview, and I'm going to have my friend on. His name is TJ, and he's quite an astute member of the Campaign for Liberty, a strong Ron Paul supporter with strong libertarian roots, and quite well-read, and always a pleasure to talk with. Now, this show is being recorded after the South Carolina primary, which was on Saturday, the 24th, I believe. Yes, and so I don't know what the outcome is yet, but we're going to still be talking about Ron Paul now, and as to how things are going. The 22nd, I believe, is the South Carolina primary. So we're really happy about that, and it would seem like the rest of the Republican Party incorporated are starting to make nice to Ron Paul. Now, I have some good news. I think TJ is out there. TJ, are you out there, my friend?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to Third Stream View. Would you like some tea or coffee?
No, that's okay.
Good, because it's self-service.
Right on.
So thanks for coming on. I was telling my massive listeners about a little bit about your background. correct me or interrupt me if I'm wrong, but you are quite the staunch Ron Paul supporter. You're active in the Campaign for Liberty. You have strong libertarian roots, or you've gotten those
roots. Pretty much, I'm a liberty activist here in Orlando and do a lot of activism, not just for Ron Paul, but for a great many other things as well. I deal with the Campaign for Liberty. That's kind of been on hiatus a little bit since the campaign, the Ron Paul campaign. Campaign for Liberty is a nonprofit, so you can't endorse a certain candidate under that umbrella. So, kind of taking a little bit of a break from that for a little while. But I do a lot of activism. Orlando Cop Watch, Puff and People United for Medical Marijuana. So there's quite a bit of activity under my belt. So.
Well, good for you, and thank you for your service to our country and to yourself. I especially like the Cop Watch people because YouTube was full of terrible police abuse and hurting other people and way beyond the law. That's why I don't care for cops and haven't for years, because they're not the cops of the past. Now they're a bunch of militarized, vehement, tough guy, oppressive bastards, a lot of them, and I don't like what's happening. They become militarized, and they've gotten all this extra gear from the military and the feds, and it's more like them against us nowadays.
It's unfortunate. It's essentially what happens when an organization is allowed to become a monopoly, and unfortunately, the police and the government in general holds a monopoly on violence, and. They don't have any market signals to help them, do good for the community. So eventually, over time, mission creep and stuff like that will push them in the wrong direction. And fortunately, there are a few people on the police departments that do see and have seen the abuses continue to grow. And hopefully, more and more of those will begin quitting their jobs and pushing the direction in the proper way. But it's going to take some time. It's things like Cop Watch and other organizations are really the only people out there holding, trying to hold these people accountable. They're individuals, so they have to be held accountable as individuals. And one camera at a time is the best way to do it, in my opinion.
Well said. Of course, a lot of them are fighting this. They don't want to be filmed. They think it's okay for them to film us. And it's come down to as if they have any right even to go to the courts or, tell the government that they don't want us citizens filming them. I mean, who the hell are they? Giving people stiff jail sentences because they filmed cops.
Right, right. Well, like I just said, roaches don't like light either. So, you got to shine the light on them every once in a while. And
exactly.
They'll continue to fight. But the struggle that they have, this fight that they put up, trying to throw people in jail for wiretapping charges or whatever. It's just, I like to make the analogy that it's essentially a struggling swimmer, a drowning swimmer, where they're reaching and grabbing at anything they can for any kind of grip on power or to hold down that veil of legitimacy. But the camera lifts the veil ever so slightly, here and there, and once the court of public opinion has changed, and they're forced to make changes. And we've actually seen some good successes here in Orlando with some of the Food Not Bombs folks. And here just recently, an activist was arrested for chalking down at City Hall, and the city ended up dropping the charges on the guy.
Would they also arrest or incarcerate young girls who are playing jacks on the sidewalk, or how they draw chalk on the sidewalk and play their little games? Would they arrest little girls for that too, you think?
No. This was basically a political assassination. This was an Occupy Wall Street gentleman who had been camping out down at City Hall, and they're just trying to remove the riffraff, so to speak. I don't really believe that they're riffraff, but that's how they see it, And they'll do anything they can to make that happen, and that's what they
TJ,
do. With this important individual.
I like to think I'm part of the good riffraff. And I like your little description just a little earlier when you described it, like a frantic swimmer, grabbing at anything. I thought you were, for a moment there, I thought you were describing the Gingrich campaign.
All the campaigns. All of them.
Well, especially his. I mean, he's desperate and so lame. But back to the Ron Paul thing. Of course, this show is being pre-recorded, so the actual primary, I believe, is on Saturday. This show is being recorded for the 23rd. And I think the primary is on the 21st? Is it next Saturday? Is it on a Saturday? Is that the primary?
I know the next debate is actually, I think
not the debate. The South Carolina primary.
I have to look on the calendar. I don't have it off the top of my head.
Okay, but I think it's the. I think it's the. Would it be the 21st? I think it's the 21st. But anyway, so this show is being recorded after that event, but I hope that Ron Paul does very well. It's a tough state, staunch conservative, very pro-military because it's got bases there and, a lot of bases in the South. So there's that conservative concept there. But he has been recently endorsed by South Carolina State Senator Tom Davis. Jim DeMint likes Ron Paul. So I hope he'll go all the way. I hope he doesn't back out, and we'll see what happens. But I can't, in the fall, I cannot vote for, if Romney's a nominee, I cannot vote for Socialism Light or the architect of Obama / O'Romney Care. There's no way. I'd rather write Ron Paul's name in, or like 2008, I couldn't stand Obama or McCain. I just won't vote.
Yeah, basically what ended up happening, the Republican base that's supporters of Ron Paul, I don't conceive that they would in any way, shape, or form vote for anybody other than Ron Paul for the Republican seat. So you'll see some changes that they're going to happen. Many people will go the Libertarian route and they'll vote Libertarian. Many people will just write in Ron Paul. So there's definitely different options that are available. And I know Dr. Paul has said many times that he's not going to seek a third party, and quite frankly, I hope he does not. As much as that sounds crazy as being a Ron Paul supporter, but I think it would actually be a pretty big hit on the liberty movement. Of course, we'll have to wait and see what happens to the Libertarian Party and who they choose for their representative to run as president. But if somebody like Gary Johnson gets in there, many Ron Paul supporters would get behind that. So could see a pretty big shakeup politically in the political scene I don't think a Republican would end up getting elected without the Ron Paul support. So.
Yeah, well, you're right. Well, I would vote for the Libertarian ticket, I guess, this time, because I couldn't stand the last two guys they ran. But you said something very smart the other day. You thought that, I'm pretty much agreeing with you now because of what you said when you had mentioned that instead of Ron Paul running as a third party candidate, which would, affect the Republican Party vote, and they're going to persecute his son over that, Rand Paul, I'm sure that'll be a payback. But when you said that, Ron Paul doesn't have to run as a third party, he could just simply endorse the Libertarian candidate. So Ron Paul hasn't run as a third party.
Yeah, that's right. I think Rand Paul would have an extremely good chance of getting in if Ron is not elected this time at the 2016 election process. So I think it would be best for, you know, for Ron just to kind of step aside, officially endorse the Libertarian candidate, Libertarian Party's candidate. Not sure who that's going to be. Like I said, we'll have to wait and see who that turns out to be. But I'm kind of crossing my fingers that it's Gary Johnson. And then if Ron Paul endorses him, then of course Ron Paul supporters probably go ahead and vote for the Libertarian, throw all their votes that direction. I mean, we're talking about 20% of the vote, so that's that's definitely going to be a shakeup in the whole election process. They won't be able to ignore, the mainstream media won't be able to ignore Gary Johnson. And quite frankly, I don't think the Republicans can win the ticket without, without these Ron Paul supporters. There's just too many of them. So it's going to be an interesting election cycle. We'll have to see what happens.
Well, I look at it this way. Regardless, if Ron Paul did run as the third party candidate, or he didn't, and Romney is the nominee, Romney will lose in a close race to Obama. I don't think he can beat Obama. Only Ron Paul can beat Obama. And because Romney, because of his past, his track record, and he's just like, I describe him as an oily, stuffed shirt, used car salesman. And he's got too much baggage. And, is it that sad in our country that millions of people have to hold their nose and vote for Romney? Is that the best this country can do? And by the way, Romney's father was a much better man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Americans who are subjected to the tyranny of the United States have been stuck in this situation for years upon years, voting for the lesser of two evils. And, you know, whenever you vote for the lesser of two evils, you're still voting for evil.
Correct.
So it's best to, to hopefully solve this problem through an election cycle again, it's unfortunately we keep saying this year after year after year, and what's the definition of insanity, trying the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So it's kind of hard to believe that even somebody like Ron Paul might be able to make the changes, but Ron Paul could definitely make some changes in the executive branch that could see some serious harm reduction through the executive branch of government. So he could reduce a lot of the executive like law enforcement areas and stuff like that, and stop the drug war just by no longer enforcing it, things like that. Likely to see some harm reduction in areas if he gets elected. Will it fix the government? No, it's never going to fix the government. The government itself has been corrupted for so long, and unfortunately I think it's pretty much done for the United States. In fact, the United States is almost acting like the drowning victim, passing all these crazy laws and drug war to continue the way it is, up to the point of where the United States now jails more than 80% of its, 80% of it, or 80% of the people that are in jail are victimless, victimless criminals, convicted of crimes, harmed no one but themselves.
It's awful. But, a President Ron Paul could... Well, first of all, I would hope that he would wear out his veto pens, and he could just go to the people when he's got a problem every time. Just get on TV and go to the people and say, Congress won't do this. This is, he'll just tell the truth and ram it down Congress's throat and go to the people. I just go around them and go to the people and say, this is what's happening, America. Is this what you want?
Well,
I think
Ron Paul,
that's how I see it.
The best thing Ron Paul can do is when he's elected and in office is to use the bully pulpit to educate the American people of the ideas of liberty, and that's the reason why I support him. I'm pro-liberty on every issue, so there's a lot of cases where I don't see any need at all for government. It's sometimes hard to support a government person, a person who is part of the government, but in the case of Ron Paul, it comes very easy to me because he is a great vehicle to deliver the message of liberty that's so dearly needed by the
Definitely.
People.
Definitely. I think he's the most qualified presidential candidate ever, and I don't say this because I'm a fanatic, and he doesn't have a crystal ball because he's grounded in economics. He knows his history. He knows the ethics of liberty. He knows he knows world geography.
he's got a very
informed, very very astute, very able to handle the job.
Yeah, he has a better voting record than Thomas Jefferson did. I mean, there's
oh,
multiple
yeah.
cases Thomas Jefferson violated the Constitution, and I think there's only been one or two votes, and I believe it was in towards the pro-life area that Ron Paul's voting record is slightly marred by voting for something unconstitutional. And we're talking one or two votes. I mean, the guy's been in Congress for how long, right? And we've got maybe one or two blemishes. People make mistakes, you know, so
of course.
Maybe that was Ron Paul's mistake and whatnot, but he's got a better voting record than I've seen any politician ever. So.
Yeah, that's the least of Ron Paul's worries. Ron Paul is also the number one Republican candidate favored by non-white voters. So that says a lot right there. And if you see on YouTube, it's interesting to watch the black supporters of Ron Paul. There's some very good ones on there, some quite astute, some like semi-gangster, but really getting it, really understanding it.
Yeah, there's it's actually pretty interesting to see. And I like to see that where
me too.
You know, people are stepping outside of the stereotypes that they've unfortunately society has put upon them, and it tears down those whole ideas that these people are somehow different than everybody else. So it's it's a good thing. I'm glad to see the support coming out from all different angles, and I hope to see it continue to grow. And we'll see what happens. Hopefully, we'll go to spend some time up in D.C. for the inauguration, have some fun, and
that's right. And I'd like to, if he gets in, I would like to buy my band to perform at the the inaugural. So that's something I'd be really interested in. And the other thing is, I forgot what I was going to say. I lost my thought there. Oh, go ahead, say something. What's on your mind about? Tell us something that interests you or your take on things, or something that you would try to advocate or get going as far as the campaign or anything to help things along.
Well, I think the campaign has been doing pretty well. I like what they've been doing. They've kept themselves strong, and they're definitely playing to win. It's a little frustrating to see that they're not putting a whole lot of focus on Florida, because that's where I am, and a lot of our activists that are now helping on the campaign and with various other Ron Paul-related projects. It comes straight from Orlando, so it's like we're definitely a breeding ground for awesome activists and campaign workers and the whole nine yards. So it's definitely really cool to see that, and frustrating that they're not putting as much focus here. But understanding the game and how it's played, it makes total sense for them to not focus as much money here until we kind of see which direction people are swaying. So you can easily
take
a ton of money to Florida, and it'd be a waste. So.
Yeah, I get it, and he should obviously, put his resources where they feel they're mostly needed. Another thing that I like to say about Ron Paul and my pro-Ron Paul dialogue is that more, and the campaign should do this too, much, much more should be made of this man's health. Yes, he's 76 years old, but he's lean, he's healthy, he's fit, he exercises. All of us, and I mean all of us, could only wish and hope that we're as healthy as Ron Paul is when we reach his age.
Yeah, I really like how the mainstream media has basically left us completely alone. They haven't gone the route, to start blaming his age and everything, because he is the oldest candidate, in history. And if he's elected, he's certainly the oldest president in history. And this topic has
good
really
for him.
Come up all in the mainstream media, so. I think it's really great. I think the reason why it hasn't come up is because no one can touch him.
Exactly.
Far as his bicycling and his level of activity, it's pretty remarkable. So, I think it's pretty interesting. And I'm glad that the media has tried to stay away from it, or if they haven't tried, they just haven't touched it. So.
Well, yeah, I've heard a few comments, but that would be my comeback about his health, how healthy he is. In fact, I wish his campaign would just mention that from time to time, just talk about his health, because I've heard people say he's too old, but and his mind is sharp too. And that comes, I believe, that your brain is a muscle and it needs exercise. So he's always reading, and he's brilliant. He's a doctor. I mean, I really admire someone who busts their ass in medical school and does that well. So he's got that strong mind and body together. And, I really respect and admire him for that.
Yeah. He doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he doesn't do anything crazy like that. So he's pretty much stayed healthy, and you know, hopefully through the course of all the stress of the campaign and stuff, you know, that's going to be, it's pretty rigorous. So
that's
hopefully
true.
Everything holds up for them and, you know, we don't have any kind of health issues, you know, crop up. But yeah, he seems healthy and the campaign they don't like to talk about it. And the media's not bringing it up, so it's probably best just to stay quiet until it needs
sure.
to be addressed.
So. But when it does, the Mighty PK certainly has the answer for it and the dialogue. The dialogue. Now, as foreign policy goes, I've come up with a great cut to the chase. That's my way of doing things on this show, by the way. I like to get to a cut to the chase solutions and things instead of numerous paragraphs on what needs to be done or this and that the problem. I like to cut to the chase. And as far as Ron Paul goes, I formulated the following question, and it really puts his opponents' backs against the wall. And I would love to say to any of them, as far as foreign policy, okay, for those of you who dislike or oppose Ron Paul, what would you say to the growing number of veterans and active duty military who enthusiastically support Ron Paul? What would you tell them? Would you tell them that they too are kooks or nuts? Would you call them unpatriotic? That's the question I would like to have answered.
Yeah, I don't know how they would answer something like that. They pretty much don't have a clue how to deal with the military, and you know they're pushing the party line is to continue all these crazy wars and continue this policing of the world activity. And Ron Paul's stance is essentially, you know, be friends to everyone, allies to none, just like George Washington said in his inaugural address. You know, just look, leave these people alone. You know, stand by your current treaties. See those through to the end of whatever the treaty timeline is, and then get out and stop. You know, stop the progress of any kind of new treaties or making allies with new people, and just mind our own business and trade with everyone. And free and open trade will work to keep people happy and going back and forth. You know, it's bad business to kill your customers. So
that's for sure.
You know, if there's free open trade, then. People tend to stay happy with each other as long as you're not coercing them to do or not do something. So,
well, I believe we should always advocate the traditional American foreign policy, which is one of armed neutrality and free trade.
What was that again? I'm sorry.
We should advocate the traditional American foreign policy of armed neutrality and free trade.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically what you have to do is just, you know, allow, you know, people need to know that you are able to defend yourself so that you don't appear to be a weak, you know, piece of land that can be just, you know, run roughshod over. And at the same time, as long as you have free and open trade, again, it's bad business to kill each other's customers, so tend to not do
sure.
that, you know, especially if there's other arbitration system, you know, systems that are available. That are out there, which again, that's just more free market opportunities for people. So,
well, that's why I formulated I formulated that question because most of those who dislike Ron Paul or oppose him, it's because of his foreign policy. So when they say, oh, you know, you'll usually hear, well, I like Ron Paul except his foreign policy. Well, that's when I launch that question because it goes right to the jugular and it puts them on the defensive. I would love to pose that question to all of talk radio and Fox News, or CNN too. They're all part of the same, you know, the pro-war, pro-empire mentality.
Yeah. Well, the military, you know, they see the horrors of war. You know, they see the blown apart bodies and their best friends getting picked off one at a time here and there. You know, so they see the negative impact, and they see, you know, why are we over here? That, you know, that sort of thing. So that, I mean, that's why the military supports Ron Paul, because they see it. They see him as the candidate that will help bring them home, and get them to stop doing these policemen of the world activities that really just seem endless. So,
well, yes, that's why I want to. That's why it would be. I'm so curious to see what the Chicken Hawks, Rush Limbaugh and Gingrich and that whole crowd would have to say to my question. You know, they're the ones pushing and promoting more war. You know, and meanwhile, the country's broke and the federal government is trying to pick a fight with Iran in the Straits of Hormuz. That's not even our part of the world. We shouldn't even be over there. I mean, why the, you know, why the intervention? They're picking these little, they're doing all these little pinpricks, and when that turns into a, you know, a confrontation, then they're going to say, well, Iran attacked the U.S. You know, that's like the Gulf of Tonkin. The U.S. Navy had boats messing with Vietnam, doing pinprick raids into North Vietnam. So there's blowback. There's, of course, there's going to be a reaction to it. And just because we're Americans, what, we're supposed to be special or sacred? Well, the it's the U.S. Well, you know, get real. Tell us the truth.
Been a big problem.
Say what?
Yeah. American exceptionalism has been a big problem for a long time. You know, the government, the United States government, has been very successful in their propaganda campaign to paint the Americans as somebody, you know, a group of people that's somehow better than everybody else in the world. And, you know, push comes to shove, everybody bleeds red, everybody loves their kids, nobody wants to see anybody else die. So, you know, really, America is really no different than anybody else, other than the fact that somehow the government decides that they think that they can, you know, be the policeman of the world, which is obviously not the case. Whenever you use violence to control, you know, the ideas and people's ambitions, the things that they want to do, the activities that they want to partake in, whenever you use violence or coercion, you're just going to end up getting violence and coercion back in the end, and that's exactly what you see in the form of blowback with the terrorist incidents that has happened and so forth. But yeah, hopefully people will learn that if you want freedom, you have to give freedom to other people, you know. So otherwise you'll just end up with the same cycle of violence that continues, you know, year after year after year, decades.
Definitely.
Whatnot.
Definitely.
Over and over again. So
with freedom comes responsibility. And, you know, I like to say about American exceptionalism, well, what does, you know, I'm proud and thankful to be born in this country and to live here and, you know, reap its benefits. I understand all that. I get all that. But thankfully, unlike most Americans, I've spent a lot of time outside of the country. And then you really get a take when you see America from outside the country and you have intelligent, interesting conversations with people from Europe or Asia or the Middle East. Then you really get a take on things. And I've come to the fact that I don't believe this American exceptionalism. We should try to be the best we can. But no country, I mean, does America have a monopoly on hard work, on education, on innovation? Does America make the best cars? Do we make the best electronics? Do we have the highest math scores? You know, so we need to get our own house in order. And when that's, if that's ever done, we still don't have any right to push the world around and be the policeman of the world. It's bankrupting us. And it's not necessary, and it's not in the Constitution. And I pose this to people when I'm debating, too, like, well, please show me, because I say, well, so are you a strict constitutionalist? Yes, I am. Okay, well, so am I. So please show me in the Constitution where it says that the federal government is supposed to have 1,000 military bases in over 130 foreign countries. Now, I know the Constitution calls for a defense and a military. We get that. Where do they get this other aspect of this massive empire? And then they're on. Then they don't really have an answer. They're stuttering. Or one tried to tell me, well, it's the president does have the authority to do that.
Well, the Constitution is the United States Constitution is a really good experiment, and I think over time it's been proven to have failed. A piece of paper can't hold anybody accountable. You have to have an atmosphere and a people who are willing to stand up and hold them accountable. Piece of paper alone won't do it. And, you know, just like any other republic that has, you know, popped up in history's past, they all devolve the same exact way. You know, they turn into eventually turn into a democracy and then eventually turn into some form of anarchy. In the form of, it's usually an oligarchy. It's usually not anarchy. It's usually a group of people who, you know, tend to rise up out of the chaos that ensues. But, you know, once a society can actually, you know, be educated and learn the ideas of liberty and maybe in pockets here and there, come into existence without having to use a coercive monopoly to maintain society's, rules and diktats for lack of a better term. So, you know, it is what it is.
That's true.
We'll see what happens.
That's true. And by the way, since we are pre-recording this show, and it is the January 16th, I'd like to wish you a happy Martin Luther King Day, my friend.
Yeah, Yeah, it's very good. I'm spending the time here at the house.
Well, and I said back at the time, I mean, this is, I don't have nothing against Dr. King, but I thought, well, they made such a big deal out of making it a holiday. Well, really, so now that it's a holiday, was the plight of black people any better the next day? You know, to me, it's a lot of window dressing. And as far as black folks go, especially, this tragic drug war has decimated the hoods in the inner city communities. And it's, you know, it's part of the problem. We need more cop watch because the drug war has its tentacles so deeply in everything. And look, the federal government has exported this drug war. Look at Mexico and in Colombia, what it's caused. And meanwhile, poppy production is at an all-time high in Afghanistan. And I've seen video on YouTube of British and American troops essentially guarding the poppy fields.
Yeah, unfortunately, the United States federal government has a really strong knack, a common knack to pave the way for democracy in other areas, where essentially all they're doing is defending somebody's, you know, resources so that, you know, corporations can eventually come in there and rob them of those resources. So it's unfortunate.
And that's the problem, what you've just described about corporations coming in. That's the problem, because that is not free market. That is not free enterprise. That is corporate statism. That is mercantilism. That is not a free market economy. They have no, you know, right to intervene in other countries or overthrow other governments and this and that. So, and that gives capitalism a bad name when, true capitalism does not allow crony capitalism or tax-funded bailouts or corporate welfare.
Yeah, all those programs, the corporate welfare, you know, all the corporatism, mercantilism, all that is, it's a form of fascism. I like to call it America's special blend of tyranny, because the United States federal government isn't 100% fascist. They're not 100% socialist. They're definitely not 100% democratic, and they certainly aren't a republic nor a constitutional republic. It's kind of a blend of all that mess. So it's...
How can you say things like that? Why do you hate America? Oh, sorry, I was sounding a little bit like Sean Hannity there. Sorry.
Well, cats and dogs, too, huh? Why do you hate America and cats and puppies? You
know? Right. Yeah.
So, you got to speak the truth, and we can sit here and trim the tops of the trees all day long, but if you're not whacking at the roots, you're never going to get rid of the problem. So.
Well, speaking of trimming, and I gave Ron Paul, when I saw him in September, I gave him a sheet of paper that I typed out a few things, the suggestions, and about trimming government. One thing, especially the feds, that I like to say and I like to share is, ladies and gentlemen, every state already has a Department of Education, a Department of Transportation, a Department of Agriculture, and environmental departments. Why are we paying for all these federal ones? We don't need all these federal ones. Every state already has one. So that's a good way of getting rid of the federal thing and trimming things down. And my solution, of course, is to give all these employees at the federal level who are let go, I would give them their full pay and benefits for a year and then cut them loose. And in the meantime, a thriving private sector would absorb a lot of those jobs.
Yeah, they should definitely have some sort of severance package. I mean, I've been let go of a company before and had an 8-month severance package. I mean, so... It's not unheard of, even in the private world, to have a decent severance package. I don't want to see people out of a job. You know, I don't want to see people having to dole off the government either. So there needs to be a happy medium there. If you flip the switch off one day, people hurt. You know, people get hurt, people die. Can't really do it that way. You really need to phase things out, and cut an entire, department of the federal government in one fell swoop. That can absolutely be done in a day. But the people who are involved in that, unfortunately, they will need to have some type of income coming in, because they've, unfortunately been stuck having to rely on the federal government to make their wage and their bills and
keep
their kids fed. You know, I don't want to see any of those folks hurt or, kids, mixed up in all kinds of problems because of lost jobs and stuff.
So and that is why
help needs to go that direction. But.
That's true. And that is why... Even the mighty PK here is, with all my brilliance, I am a man of compassion. And just as like you said, yeah, they could get rid of a federal agency in a day. Okay, fine, it's gone. Now let's give the employees their full pay and benefits for at least a year. That's how I would do things. And
I'm not sure if a whole year would be necessary. I'm not sure if I would necessarily advocate for an entire year. I definitely would want them to receive some pay, so to have some decent time, to find other work and allow the free market to start bringing up different services and products maybe that didn't exist because the workforce wasn't there to create them. I mean, so there's definitely some opportunity there. But it's really difficult for me to advocate any growth whatsoever in government. So I'd be afraid that
of course,
a year's worth of pay would end up giving somebody enough time to coalesce and create a new department and throw them into that department.
I advocate giving them a year because to me that's ample time, and all these other private sector people have been getting their unemployment for what, 2 years or so, some of them, and it is still much, much cheaper just to give them their year pay and benefits than to keep those bureaucracies going, because they're, you know, very billions and billions and billions, very expensive and useless. So let's get the employees out, take care of the employees, abolish the agencies. We don't need them. Something I forgot to mention about overseas, and I was saying this throughout the 90s, here they're closing the military bases at home and expanding the ones abroad. They should close the ones abroad and let our allies staff those former bases with their own military. It'd be a lot cheaper in the long run, a lot less intrusive. They can staff them. Then the way their local communities will still have, you know, the posts there, the military establishments there, and they could still thrive. And I would give the military 6 months or a year to bring everybody home from overseas.
Yeah, I think Dr. Paul talked about basically bringing them over overnight. I don't know what his actual plan is. He tends to throw that out there, from time to time. He says, we went over there in a day, we'll just come home in a day. You know, so I'm not
just
sure.
Just marched in, we'll march out. That was a little simplistic.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't necessarily know what his plan would be. Again, if you don't get them out fast enough, then somebody else finds, a reason for them to stay. Or they'll change their name instead of a soldier. Now they're, a
contractor
officer or something.
Oh, yeah. So, well, they always try to underhand things. The government always does underhanded things and, just to keep their whole thing going. It's just a going concern, and it's, they have their endless tax revenue and creating inflation. They get away with it where the private sector can't get away with that. And, of course, then you have the politically connected businesses who learn the system, they tweak the system, and then they become the corporate socialists tied in with the central state.
Yeah, well, government in general, just the anatomy of government, it's a coercive monopoly. They have a monopoly on violence, and they have no qualms about using that monopoly on violence to keep their veil of legitimacy going. You know, it's a grand scale racketeering scheme that they have going on with the various forms of extortion. People tend to call them taxes. It is a form of extortion. It is a form of racketeering. If anybody else did it without a suit, tie, or a badge, they would end up in prison. So it's just this very thin veil of legitimacy that they'll protect at all costs, whether they have to wage war against another nation, or if they have to wage war on their citizenry through something like the war on drugs or anything else that they could crop up that tends to lift their veil of legitimacy. Right now here in the United States, there's going more into the whole internet copyright, issues that keep popping up. It's, they have to maintain this veil of legitimacy on intellectual property, which, the internet has completely shown to be an illegitimate form of an illegitimate business plan, really, to think that a criminal organization can run around and protect this so-called intellectual property. It's like, if I give you an idea, or if somebody puts an idea out there and then somebody else takes that idea and does something with it, well, if you didn't want someone else to do anything with it, you shouldn't put that idea out there, because you can't possibly claim ownership on somebody else's idea that they now hold in their head without hiring a criminal gang to be your muscle for you.
I see what you mean about that. I see what you mean about that. I am slightly sympathetic to intellectual property rights in the sense that I've been saying for years that the copyright laws and the patent laws ought to be weakened by at least 75%.
Mm-hmm. And, well, it's difficult, especially with you being a musician. Once you put your work out there, someone could copy it, and then someone could make money at it. And, that's the stuff that you spent your hard work and hard time to perfect and put down on paper and put down on vinyl, and now it's somebody else is taking it and running with it. So yeah, I can definitely see how how that's you know, frustrating and can downright just anger you to no end. You know, but at the same time, you know, you take this risk when you put an idea out there, and people have to realize that. And they have to realize that, you know, if they want to control this particular idea that they've put out in the form that they've put it in, they have to keep it a secret unless they want to share it. And then they put themselves right back in the situation again. So,
well, yeah, and I am not, or have ever been I'm not an anarchist libertarian, or I'm not an anarchy capitalist, but I'm very, you know, I'd rather get rid of about 90% of the federal government. And even the state government's got to be on notice that they can't run roughshod over our rights either. I'm all for states' rights. Yes, yeah, I want to bring back slavery. That's why I'm for states' rights. But besides the fact that I want to bring back slavery, which seems something that the idiots liberals and the media brings up, you know, they always bring up the slavery thing. You know,
yeah, so they always bring up the slavery thing, but they never mention that slavery still exists today. We just call it the United States citizen.
Yeah, well, I like to joke around.
I understand where you're coming from. All I'm saying is, you know, the 13th Amendment of the federal Constitution abolished slavery in the form that most people, you know, envision when they talk about slavery. But the 14th Amendment created the federal citizen, which is just another form of slavery. Now, basically, the federal government can say, hey, well, you can work because we give you permission to, and then since you're not working for us, you can keep X amount of the wealth that's created from that. That's nothing more than slavery. It's just under a different term. And as long as they keep painting it as a different term, then people never realize that they're actually slaves to the system.
Well said. However, for many years now, many decades, we're all on the federal plantation now.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah, and you'll get some people, you know, you're like, well, you know, again, why do you hate America? You know, if you don't like it, then you should just leave. Well, it's like, you know, I was born here. I shouldn't have to leave. Why do you think that someone should be able to force me to leave? And, you know, why don't I just stay here and talk about the ideas of liberty and possibly make a change in this direction versus just, you know, up and leaving? You know, so it's, you know, again, you can't force somebody. You know, once you use force, you're just going to get forced back. So the best way that you can try and solve some of these issues is to talk about them, put the ideas out there, and let people use those ideas to further push the meaning, you know, the meaning now of liberty.
But now you're sounding like one of those dangerous Ron Paul supporter types.
Dangerous to the status quo, my friend.
Now, speaking of the status quo, I want to move on to taxes. I believe that there's got to be – I believe in micro taxes. I don't mind paying micro taxes, just enough to support what's in the Constitution and to maintain a very strictly limited constitutional republic. So I advocate micro taxes and or user fees. I don't mind toll roads. If we had micro taxes, I don't mind paying a toll roads or user fees. And I'd like to say that the revenue that comes, and even if the government owns the roads, I mean, any revenue they get from the roads or the tolls can only go to the infrastructure, may only go to the roads and bridges. It cannot go to sick children. It cannot go to the schools. It can only go to maintain the infrastructure. So the system I see in a system of micro taxes, you wouldn't be paying for this huge federal bureaucracy. There would be no drug war. There would be a military within the bounds of the Constitution, so that everybody's taxes would greatly diminish, and there would be more investment. There'd be more production. There'd be more liberty. There'd be more freedom in a system of micro taxes. So taxes is not a thing.
If the United States were to return to its Constitution, there's plenty of tariffs in there that could be used to fund the government without the income tax and various other forms of taxes.
You're right. That's why
completely unconstitutional. So if the government were to return itself to its Constitution, the level of spending would be drastically slashed, and they would be able to basically fall back to, like, I think it was like 2005 levels or something like that of spending, just by cutting all these different, you know, organizations and schemes that they're running.
Right.
So you could conceivably go to no tax towards the citizen and just do it all on tariffs. But again, you know, when you start, you know, applying tariffs to things, this is one of the areas where the Constitution, in my opinion, fails. Is when you apply a tariff, some countries might see that as an act of war. Some countries will definitely have some sort of blowback that is a result of that tariff. So there's always a risk there with that. But and my envision of the future would be that people could essentially get along. I don't know how that's going to work, but hopefully get along and not force other people into these various different forms. You know, it's me, myself, I prefer a more voluntary society where there's far less coercion and violence used to control the way that society moves. And, you know, I'm tolerant of other, you know, governments and religions and stuff like that. Then, you know, hopefully other people will be tolerant and not force me to play their game. So, but, you know, one step at a time, like I said, all we can do is spread the ideas and hopefully some of them will catch on.
Well stated. Now, you mentioned tariffs, and this is something I wish Ron Paul would talk about whenever he talks about taxes. The words I would use are, well, ladies and gentlemen, the federal government calls for it to be funded. This Constitution calls for the federal government to be funded by what should be micro tariffs and micro excise taxes. So in my view, my constitutional view, I would impose. I would have a 2% tariff on foreign goods and say a 2% tariff on tobacco, alcohol, and marijuana. Those are all micro. 2% is not going to cause a trade war. I would also make the corporate tax 2%. So they would have a thriving business community, and the liberals wouldn't totally wet their pants because the evil businessmen would still pay some in taxes.
Yeah, see, that for me, the whole thing was still that still requires the use of coercion and violence in order to solve these funding issues, and I personally I couldn't agree with that. I like,
but there'd be a lot much there'd be a lot less violence with my take on things. There'd be a lot less.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that it would be harm reduction, and I might be able to support something like that in a harm reduction sense. And, you know, in my opinion, the best way is to remove the coercive force that's applied and find other ways to fund this thing. You know, it's the whole reason why government exists is to continue itself, its growth, and to continue its veil of legitimacy. So if you reduce the requirement for that veil, then either they have to change their ways or go away. And either way, I'd be happy.
Well, that's why I use the term micro taxes, micro, you know, fees. So in TJ's view, TJ, how would you, for example, how would you fund the states, you know, your state? How would it fund the things it needs or it needs to do, or, you know?
I don't really care. I mean, I don't care how they fund themselves as long as they don't use violence to do it. And if they have to use violence to do it, then they shouldn't exist. So it's like, you know, if something is so good for us, then why does it have to be forced upon us? If it's so good for us, then the people of the state will help fund it through voluntary donations. And if not, then it would go away and the free market would replace it. So I would not for continued violence at all.
Right, but I'm mainly referring to just objective way to fund things like of course, in a libertarian society, there'd be a lot less crime because it wouldn't be a drug war. We'd still have some prisons, police and firemen. And the roads, the infrastructure. So, you know, I would advocate a micro tax or a sales tax, part of a small sales tax. I was curious the mechanics of how you would go about that. I know you don't believe in coercion. Neither do I. But, you know, how would we fund those things? Of course, I think the schools should be privatized and there should be no standing in the way of setting up schools. And the present schools could be leased or, you know, they could be little private schools, thriving private schools. But how would you fund things? How do you see, you know, funding things?
I would begin transferring that stuff to the private sector. These are all services that can be handled through the free market processes. Continuing it in even the slightest way is only going to continue the problem. I don't foresee it ever getting solved. I mean, again, you know, humans have been using this idea called government for about 10,000 years now, and it's failed constantly over and over and over and over. I think it's time we try something different, and that's the reason why I push the ideas of liberty and free markets.
Yeah, of course. But I was just, you know, so if it was all privately funded, then would it be like on a subscription fee, or how would, for example, the police or fire departments be funded?
Well, there's a really good book actually out there that handles this question quite well. The free market would solve these things through various different ways, but you know, initially it's probably going to be a little bit of chaos there.
Sure.
But you'd probably see something more like an insurance plan, or like you said, a subscription, something like that. But you know, people will try one thing, it might not work, so they'll try a different format, different business model, you know, that sort of thing. And competitors will eventually compete and you know, fix the product or service, and prices will go down, you know, just like the free market works. But this book I was referencing, the book is called The Market for Liberty. It's a book that was written, I believe, in somewhere in the 70s, like 76 maybe, somewhere in that time frame. It's by the Tanhills. If you go to a couple different websites that have, if you go out on Google and just search for the Market for Liberty, you'll see it there. I believe you can buy it at the Mises.org website, the store on the Mises. And you can get it on audiobook format just by going to, I think it's a book, book.freeking.com, K-E-E-N-E.com. It's a group of activists up in New Hampshire that have hosted the audiobook version of that, but it goes through how police and justice and stuff like that would be dispensed in a free society, free of government coercion, and it's pretty detailed, really good read. Would explain it quite heavily, but essentially the free market would work out these different things through competition, open trade, and eventually solve all these issues. Roads and stuff like that's really easy. I mean, just take a look at Disney. Those roads are all private roads. And when was the last time you hit a pothole on Disney property? You know, it just doesn't happen. Well, the last time you even seen construction at Disney, and they tend to build something completely out of nowhere and hide it until they're ready to unveil it. So, you know, it's free market can handle these problems. It's just that people have not thought for a long time. They've not thought that doing what's been, you know, going on over and over and over is a bad thing. So they've never thought to look at, you know, how it could be done better. And when they do think about how it could be done better, typically people just go back to a government solution. But if government's the problem, government's consistently the problem, then we must try and seek a different avenue. Again, if you keep doing the same thing over and over, expecting the same result, that's just insanity. So,
well, that's true. That's true. I agree, and as I am a staunch advocate of the free market and no barriers to market entry, it's just that you said there would be a little chaos. So in the meantime, my shrinking government ideas would then allow the private sector to come in and take care of these functions. And you're gonna face a lot of opposition from the masses who aren't informed, don't read these books and whatnot. So it takes a good spokesman and a charming person, probably like myself, to help implement these things. But that's what it's going to need, because most people don't do the intellectual homework. It's always a minority pointing the way.
Well, the fortunate thing is that everybody interacts with each other on a voluntary basis, on a daily basis anyhow. I mean, how else could you get to work? You know, people are all out on the road driving 3,000-pound weapons, and nobody, you know, barrels into each other on purpose. It's always an accident. So, I mean, there's tens of thousands of people, they're all interacting with each other on a daily basis, on a voluntary basis, without the use of coercion and violence. In fact, most of the time when cops show up, people leave because they don't want to be around them. So it's, you know, this voluntary idea is there. And when I say, you know, a bout of chaos, you know, it doesn't take very long. If you look at the last year's Egyptian revolution that they had over there, they had within 3 days, they had the internet back up. All the IT guys, you know, that all the IT nerds and admins and everything else, you know, was able to put the internet back online after just 3 days of it being shut down from the government. And then, you know, within 2 or 3 days, they had medical services and food services and vendors and everything down at Terrier Square, helping the people that are down there. You know, there's, so these things will pop up. They'll, you know, when there's no barrier to entry, they pop up organically. They come and go organically. The market weeds these things out. It's done in a peaceful way. Your biggest thing is to get into some type of third-party arbitration. I think that's probably the most, that's like the tipping point. If you can't set up a third-party arbitration system in a quick enough time frame, then people will resort to violence to solve their problems. Just as you see in the black market today, when, you know, like, say, for instance, the drug war has pushed various different drugs into the black market. Somebody has a bad drug deal. They can't go to the law because the law will throw them in jail. They have no third-party arbitration system set up. They resort to the gun. So this is probably one of the most important things that you have to get up and running is a type of third-party arbitration system. And they already exist today. There are third-party arbitrators out there that you can apply to any contract that you you know, that you create with somebody. So we just have to protect private property. We have to protect the right to contract. And you can do that through ostracizing people who don't, and you know, go from that avenue of it to make those changes in society. So.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, and also about the drug war. And at this point, I want you to know that your host here, the Mighty PK, has used marijuana, and I have inhaled.
Yeah, as have I. I think just about everybody.
And I've exhaled. But I have no fear in telling people that because this generation, you know, oh, big deal. Oh, so-and-so politician smoked marijuana. You know, big deal. I don't care what drugs he used or who he slept with. I care about what policies they advocate.
Yeah, well, I think everybody has, and everybody at some point in their time should probably try it, you know, and determine for themselves, you know, what it is or isn't that they like about it, and, you know, why some people are afraid or not afraid of it, and just move along from there. You know, just leave other people alone. Let people be free. If you want freedom for yourself, you must first give that freedom to other people. Otherwise, you're just going to end up controlled in the end. You know, and just let people be free, man. Freedom's to answer. What's the question?
That is true. And in closing, I would like to say this about marijuana, the sacred herb. Well, it does enhance an orgasm, so I think even cops could get that. But as I like to say, the people who are addicted to drugs in the drug war is the cops, the politicians, and the bureaucrats who expand their turf. They're getting more goodies from government and more power. So we need to get
like
this
what
stupid seen drug
in the
war.
Past with alcohol prohibition, it's a you know it's an excuse to grow the police state, an excuse to grow the government. You know, so hopefully it'll go away soon.
Definitely. Well, with that, I would like to thank you for coming on to my show, TJ, because PK appreciates TJ and appreciate you coming on. And thank you for what you're doing in the cause of liberty and supporting the Ron Paul campaign, being a good citizen, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And thanks again for coming on my show. And with that, I'm going to close down now. I'm going to say good night, everyone. And thank you for listening and tuning in to Third Stream View, which is here every Monday evening on bbsradio.com, Station 2, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. So until next week, this is your not-so-humble host, PK, saying good night, everyone. You know